racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
I knew I should have gone for the longer intro. Colin Ford joining us once again here on Inside Motorsport. And Colin, a very quiet week as Australia-wise for motorsport, but plenty going on right around the world.
That's right, it was all happening last weekend, but of course this weekend it's all happening overseas. It's happening over in the US with the last round of the Indy Series. We've got Croft over in the UK with the last round of British Touring Car Championship. And of course, if we come back to Australia, the latest news is the latest issue of Motorsport News is out on the newsstands currently. Of course,
collector's issue,
the last of the current version, but and it looks good too because this is the issue where they covered the GMC 400. And joining us now is editor Phil Brannigan. Phil, another bumper issue for Motorsport News, and sort of the last of the current style.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's $4.50 at the newsstand. I've been told they're changing hands on the black market for as high as $19. I don't think so. It'd be nice, but it is a collector's edition. This is the last of the old style, so I'd say people go out there and buy two.
Mm. Now, of course, this issue, you've got quite a few stories that are running. Naturally enough, you had your coverage of the GMC 400 in Canberra, the Oran Park V8 Lights round, and the Lakeside Super Tourist, but your cover story, the Kiwis are coming.
Yes, and it is interesting because we were talking to some people from Holden about that after the magazine came out, Dolan, and they were sort of saying, is this really happening? And we're saying to them, well, you're from Holden, don't you know? And apparently it's all going ahead. I was off in a Yokohama title launch during the week in Queensland, and I was talking to some New Zealand journalists who were over for that, and they said, yep, it's all going ahead, four drivers in the frame, two cars, two Commodores, and possibly two super production drivers in New Zealand on the go. Holden New Zealand tipping in money, two cars being ordered from Perkins Engineering, and apparently a multi-million dollar budget, and it's all go. And I think pretty soon we'll see drivers like Shane Drake and maybe Jason Richards over here mixing it with the best in the Shell Series.
Could they really well and truly get us confused if we have Jason Richards up against Stephen Richards and Jim decides to get...
Oh, that's what we need more Richards.
Yeah. But somebody's going to say, yeah, so, and the leaders are Richards, Richards or Richards.
Yeah, it's a commentator's nightmare. I mean, people say Murray Wolf is not up to the job, and I've got a little bit of commentary experience behind the microphone. It's a tough ask.
Yeah. But, of course, talking of Richards, you do have a very good interview with Stephen Richards following his win in Canberra, and that actually is one of the real highlights of this latest edition.
Well, yeah, Stephen Richards back in form, of course. Well, he always tries hard, but the team, the Kmart team, hasn't been qualifying that well. And what an amazing story. Stephen has overheating in the first practice session, misses the session, Murph blows an engine, misses the session, and then what happens on the weekend? Murphy wins the race and Richo wins the weekend.
Mm.
An amazing turnaround. And it just shows you that these renewed formats and these longer distance races really upset the apple cart. We saw Craig Baird win at Phillip Island. We saw Stephen Richards win overall at Canberra. Who's going to win at Queensland or Winton? We don't know. Probably HRT. But changing the format changes the winners as well.
Mm. Well, it does add something into the equation in terms of people having to think differently. In the old days, we just had every race in the Shell Series was essentially a sprint race. A couple of short races. It's pretty easy who's going to win. But mixing it up a bit, changing the format in a few races, it does actually put a bit more onto the teams to plan ahead and come up with something different for the longer races.
Well, that's right. I mean, let's not take anything away from Craig Lowndes. He's been a great touring car champion. He's won three championships and he's done a great job. But the format's played into his hands. You qualify well, which Craig usually does, you get a result. You start well, which Craig usually does, you get a result. If you're quick on cold tyres, and Craig's the best in the business of that, you're going to win races. So that format has really allowed Craig to use his strengths. But mix the format up, and maybe Murph, and maybe Stephen Richards, and maybe Brad Jones, and maybe Craig Baird, and maybe Stephen Johnson say, okay, we'll have a crack at winning these races, and that's good for the sport.
Mm. Now, of course, one of the other things that you've got in this issue is there's a little bit there about Alain Menu coming back down to have a run with Mark Larkham in the Mitre 10 Ford Falcon.
Yeah, Larkham had a list of drivers he wanted to share the Mitre 10 Falcon with in the Queensland 500 in the Bathurst Classic. The top name on that list was Alain Menu. He made more or less three phone calls to Menu. Menu said, yep, we're away. And Ford have said, yeah, that's a good idea. He's a Ford driver, so we'll have him down here. The question now is, who does Larkham have in the car for the Queensland 500? And I think it's going to be one of the young guys out of Formula Holden. There's a number of guys being talked about. Of course, Larry Perkins is going to have a second car as well. So you know, drivers like Greg Ritter or Kristen Murchison or somebody like that might find themselves in position to go out there and drive a car. And that's going to be good for Larco. But in the meantime, hey, have a venue. All you need is a lot of razor blades, and you're away. You know, the guy's got a very heavy 5 o'clock shadow, but he's goddamn quick.
Mm. And the thing is, too, that he has been around Bathurst before, although slightly slowly with Thomas Maziera. So he has a
very fast in the Renault.
Mm. Oh, yes, very, very fast in the Renault. We know that for sure. He's actually a man who is very, very quick. It's just unfortunate those Renaults didn't hold together as well as some people thought they would. But, yeah, very good to see. Now, of course, one of the other things which I saw in this base issue, which is very interesting, you've got some good stories coming up about some of the potential support acts and drivers who are going to start up in Adelaide at the end of the year for the race of 1,000 years with talk of things like, you know, Formula 3 and the Women's Global GT Series coming along.
That's right, and there has been some conversation from Adelaide back to the Motorsport News office saying, where did you get those stories from? And my reply has been, well, are they wrong? And no one in Adelaide's actually come to me and said, hey, they're wrong. You know, we're not going to have Formula 3. We're not going to have Women's Global Series. But our spies tell us that they are going to have F3, not so much in the way we've written it in the news story, but since then it's transpired the cars will be going back to the UK and Germany and all over after the Korean race, and maybe flying out here. But at the moment, negotiations are still going on. We believe we're right that the Global Series is going to be a walk-up start, and we're looking forward to seeing F3 as well, because that gives a few Australian drivers a chance to mix it with the best.
Mm. So of course, naturally enough, with the Women's Global GT Series, since they're running Pinoz Esperanti Coupe, I suppose that the fact that Don Pinoz is organising all this doesn't have any sort of impact on it, does it?
Well, you know, is it or is it not a walk-up start? And the other thing that should be borne in mind is that the guy who actually is organising the support events for the Adelaide is a member of the Formula 3 Racing, the Formula 3 Association Committee. So, you know, let's not go too far ahead of ourselves, but look forward to the fact that there will be open wheels on the streets of Adelaide in December and a bunch of chicks in cars.
And it'd be interesting to see some of those drivers too, as mentioned, you know, some of the ones who've driven previously are ex-Formula 1 series, and I'm sure there's probably a couple of places there for some suitable Australian female talent.
Well, I suppose that Melinda Price and Karen Brewer and a bunch of other people will be looking at opportunities. Of course, I don't know whether Lynn St. James runs in that series. She owns that series. I'm in a lot of trouble.
Oh, well, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
I'm changing my name and wearing a mustache to Adelaide.
Yeah, Chris Landon.
That's it.
Yeah. No. We spoke to her here on IMS about a year ago when she was still trying to get it all up and running. And she is the actual owner of it. And it seems like she's starting to get a bit of help with the series now from Don Panos.
Well, I mean, good luck to her if she wants to do that. But my point with Lynn St. James has always been that she's been notable for being a female racing driver in the same way that people might be notable for being a left-handed racing driver, or a blue-eyed racing driver, or a black racing driver, or an Israeli racing driver. It's about time Lynn St. James hung up the gloves, and she's been racing against men all her life, and she's never really achieved anything, and that's my view.
Mm. All right, now, one big story, which I don't know whether you've heard, and I have got unconfirmed reports, but the weekend after the Le Mans 24 Hour is traditionally the Goodwood weekend, and the Festival of Speed there at Goodwood. Now, I have heard that an Australian driver, but I don't have the name, has been killed at that event.
First I've heard of it, and everyone will be hoping and praying, but that's an erroneous piece of information. I wouldn't even care to name the drivers who were driving at Goodwood at the moment, because it'd be irresponsible, but yeah. Let's hope everything is okay as far as the Aussies are concerned at Goodwood, but certainly from here I'll be racing off to the internet and having a look at that and seeing if there is any news.
Yeah, that's right. This event is a hill climb event, but it has the full support of just about all the Grand Prix teams, particularly the English ones, and in fact our own Alan Jones was going to be driving the FW21, I think it was, at the event.
I believe he's actually going to be driving an FW07B, one of the cars similar to which he won the 1980 World Championship. But that's not even, if we don't have any more details, it would be irresponsible of us to talk about that. So let's wait until there's more information available and hope for the best as far as that's concerned.
Mm. But that is one of the big events in historic motoring, isn't it?
Oh, no question. It's a classic for anyone who hasn't been to the event. It's basically a 1.5 kilometre blast up Lord March's driveway, and it's an event which attracts the best and the brightest of historic motor racing. I know that Jackie Ickx, for instance, attended his first Goodwood last year and said that it had been an admiration that he had never been to any before, and he was going to make sure that it never happened again, and he was going to make Goodwood one of the highlights of his annual motor racing pilgrimages.
Mm. Of course, the interesting thing about Goodwood is they actually give quite a period feel. I think that's the one where to get into the paddock area you must dress appropriately to the era of the 1950s and 60s.
Well, that's the other Goodwood. That's the one that's held on the old Goodwood circuit, which is also owned by Lord March and which has been restored to some of its former glory. So the summer event is the one that goes up his driveway. It's more or less a one-way hill climb, as you just mentioned, but the Goodwood circuit event, you've got to actually dress in the look of the period, and that's absolutely true, and you get to mix it with people like Sterling Moss, and I know that Barry Sheen and Damon Hill raced each other on motorcycles there last year, for instance, and that's another event I must get to one of these days when I'm not so busy running this magazine.
Yeah, or it could be the perfect opportunity to finally give yourself an overseas assignment to go and cover the event in depth.
What we need is the editor of Motorsport News to send one of his fearless reporters, OS, and if that's me, good luck.
Yep. Now, of course, the other item that was of interest this week is you've made discussions on the possibility of sequential gearboxes for the V8 supercars as being something that's on the agenda for all those particular people to consider.
Well, it's been on the agenda for the last 3 or 4 years. Every few months it pops up and it gets gunned down in flames. But the feeling I got in Canberra from talking to people was more than ever, people decided they wanted to have sequential gearboxes. I spoke to Peter Hollinger, that's the way it's pronounced, Peter Hollinger, last week, and he said, anyone who says it's more expensive doesn't know what they're talking about. They gave me the figures, they're there in the magazine, it's $1,000 extra, or $1,100 now with GST, and I think it's the way of the future. I can't see that it's actually going to take that much skill away, and if it was a dumb sight, me driving a supercar in the V8 Light Series, all it means is I'm not going to be able to go out there and torch a gearbox, kill some valves in an engine by going from fifth to first instead of fifth to third. And I think it's a good idea. But it's not going to be up to people like you and me or even Peter Hollinger. It's going to be up to the competitors who run Tiga. And the way of the world at the moment is I think it's about 50-50 and it's going to come down to a few votes either way.
Mm. Now, of course, this issue, as we've mentioned at the beginning, marks the last of the current style and format of Motorsport News. With the next edition, which is due out, I think, around about the 6th of July, it changes to a new look.
It does. Pull out your Sunday newspapers, get the magazine out of there, the cover magazine that's in the middle. That's about the size we're going to. That's about the sort of paper we're going to. Interesting to note, the opposition's gone to more colour this week, which is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. We're very pleased to see that. But yeah, the next issue of Motorsport News will look different. It's going to be a different size. It's going to be in a different part of your newsagent. It's going to be full colour. It's going to cost the same except for GST. And right now we're going madly into the magazine business in the office. I'm in there very, very early tomorrow morning to start the new issue. And we're away. I can't tell you what features. I might tell you next weekend what features we've got coming up. But we have got some absolute doozies. All the stuff we've been planning for the last 4 years, saying if only we can do this, we're doing. It's going
to
be great.
Well, it's good to see, and it's probably a chance as well for Motorsport News to differentiate itself from your opposition in that particular marketplace and move into that sort of line of some of the other hallowed magazine of motorsport, autosport sort of line of things.
That's right. It gives me the opportunity to do a swimsuit issue.
Oh, please, I don't want to see Dirk Kleinsmith in a swimsuit.
Dirk Kleinsmith and Larry Perkins in his togs.
Oh, could be dangerous. We don't want to go there, please.
Greg Warner in a wet suit. No, I don't want to go there. Maybe Belinda Prunt.
We could think about that, yes.
Yeah, often do.
But once again, you've got a top issue of Motorsport News that's out currently. And the stories, if you look at it, you go from Canada with Formula 1 Grand Prix to France with Le Mans, right round Australia with the racing that's been going on here, all over the place with drag racing, rallying, speedway, you name it. And of course, the controversy of the Acropolis Rally. Should we mention such the controversy there?
Well, there are no team orders in motor racing. Just as there are no fixes in Test cricket. And sorry, I'll just go back there and rewind that tape a bit. But yeah, my view is, if you're going to have team orders in motor racing, and there's always going to be team orders in motor racing, let's just get them out in the open. Everyone knows Ford spend more money than the FIA, and they should make the rules. It's a bit silly, and why complain about it? HRT do it, DJR do it. I'm sure that, you know, a team order. What is a team order? Is a team manager is a team order, a team manager saying to a mechanic, don't put that tyre on yet, put that tyre on, because we want to save that for the third race. Mm. Is that a team order?
Yeah. And of course, you know, to what degree are team orders?
Exactly. Yeah. Like I say in that little editorial piece, is that only when it changes the result. So I think the team order should be left well enough alone. But anyway, I mean, there's plenty of other motor racing. I can't recall having an issue with motorsport news with all that touring car racing and Formula One and Le Mans and bikes and this and that. All-in-one issue, so let's not get too carried away with the Acropolis
rally. Yeah, but as I say, it's a huge issue. Once again, well done to the team. Some great photography, always in colour, and Manifold, the ultimate trackside boy. Yes, he's got his chequebook out as usual, ready to purchase on you. No, this is probably part of your wish list, if you could buy what was available.
Probably, yeah. I mean, we'll get whatever we can. Mm.
Or whatever the car companies will give you. Should they be so silly? Well, Phil Branger, thank you very much once again for joining us here on Inside Motorsport. We'll talk to you next week to see what's coming up in the new revised All Singing, All Dancing Motorsport news, and hopefully we'll see where we go from there.
I'll probably be in the office every hour of those until the next 7 days, but yeah, looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, Phil Branger.
In the Indy Racing League, it was Eddie Cheever Jr. who took victory, the first ever for the Nissan Infiniti. He caught up with the media and had this to say.
Oh, man, that's good. I'm getting so tired of answering, when is the Infiniti going to win? Next question is, when is the Infiniti going to win the championship?
And he pointed out that next to the championship, Eddie Cheever now leads that championship as they go into the final rounds.
I'm normally not at a loss for words at all. I really need to thank... Obviously, Excited Home for giving us so much support and allowing us to make a run for the championship. And we have worked very hard with Nissan Infiniti to get it to this point. I was looking forward to a race with Lazier, and I saw he had a problem, so I'm sure we got a long way to go to the end, but what a great race, and I'm so happy and so honored to have won.
Frank Hall, he is the Infiniti Engine Builder Program Director, and he was extremely happy to see victory for the Nissan finally.
For a moment, we knew as soon as I talked to Ed Pink and knew what had happened with that one, and it's a shame because Robbie was really running strong. He had the command of the race early, and it's, I mean, truly a crying shame.
It's been a long time coming. Congratulations, Frank.
Thank you. Everybody's happy. Thanks, Eddie Cheever.
In second place, the rookie, Etten Darre, had a fantastic run. He caught up with the media later after the event.
My car wasn't very good in the last five laps, I'd say. And I was worried about him overtaking me, so that yellow helped me a lot. But it's a great feeling to be on the podium again, and this last year in Indy Lights, I've never been to the podium.
And Scott Sharp, after winning a huge race at Texas the week before, has managed to get himself back into third after an ill-handling car had seen him drop right back through the standings.
On the first run, you know, we fought some looseness conditions and tightened that up, and the car was really strong in the second run. Then, we just had a combination. The car wasn't quite where we wanted it in traffic, and it was a little loose on its own, so we fought that a lot. But, hey, we came into these last two races with the Delphi team wanting to get two top finishes, get ourselves back in the points race. Winning last weekend and third here basically accomplishes our goal. We weren't till last weekend. You know, we were a little out of it. But, after Indianapolis is over, it becomes points, points, points. You want to win as much as you can, but you need to get the points.
So the IRL will take a little bit of a break. Their next race, not until July. It will be interesting to see how things go because the kart championship in particular, Colin, is also under the new control of Ray Hall. And, the biggest problem that they were saying in kart is they don't have enough Americans. The IRL certainly has plenty of them.
Yeah, and things look like that it could change in the future. It's interesting to see during the week that we had reports coming out from Europe and the USA suggesting that people like Juan Pablo Montoya, of course, is very likely to head over to join Williams in Formula One shortly, could be very likely joined by another kart leading light, but a non-American, Dario Franchitti, who is looking to have a test drive with Jaguar before the end of the season and could make the move from the FedEx Kart Series 2 Formula 1 in 2001. It's actually interesting the fact that Franchitti is considering driving for Jaguar. Many people think that his most obvious route in Formula 1 would be through BAR, given his existing links with Honda, the Reynard chassis people, and the team's main sponsors are both linked. And of course, you look at the reliability problems they're having at Jaguar Racing, you'd say, well, why would you go there? At the same time, we hear the other story, the fact that David Coulthard, another Scotsman, is looking about the possibility of where does he go when his Formula One time is finished. And when he made his appearance on the Late Night Show with David Letterman a week or so back, he indicated that he may race in the Champ Car Championship when he retires from Formula One. Now, interesting enough, Letterman is a co-owner of the Team Rahal Kart outfit, and therefore it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah, Rahal's now in charge of the FedEx Kart Championship, and here he is with Letterman talking to Coulthard. So could this be early contract negotiations? So we'll see where all that heads in time, naturally enough. Of course, good to see Team Penske once again up in the FedEx Kart Championship, doing well and having a bit of luck for a change. Interesting enough, we did have results in terms of the provisional pole for the Portland round of the Indy Lights Championship, and there Johnny Kane was sitting on provisional pole after the opening day of qualifying at Portland. He was 0.03 of a second faster than Jason Bright, and it was Scott Dixon sitting down in about 7th place, so that will possibly change after final qualifying, but at this point in time, Jason Bright looks to be back on track after he had his problems in Detroit crashing out in that particular race.
Champ Car News, and first up we start at, of course, the Detroit Belle Isle was the place and the scene for an emotional first win for Helion Castro Neves. The Brazilian becomes the 7th winner in 7 races. A fantastic effort for the young Brazilian who drove the Penske to its 101 victory.
Well, as you saw how well Elio ran at Long Beach behind Tracy, he ran hard, he had the fuel down, but today was a special day. He ran hard all day, kept his nose clean, had a good quick stop. His crew should be congratulated on getting him out ahead of Franchitti. And then the lap times that he ran at the end were outstanding, quicker than anybody had run in the 15th. It just shows you how good he is, and he kept it on the racetrack. So, great winner, gives our team a lot of momentum. Well, I think we knew that we had a good car earlier in the season, a good team, but we didn't know how to execute. You know, new tires, new engine for us, strategy, new people. But I think we're pulling it together, and you're going to see us get tougher and tougher as we go through the season. But again, reliability and finishing, and that's what Elio did here. That's what his problem the first couple of races. So all I can say is we're thrilled to win here in Detroit. It's kind of my second hometown, so we're thrilled to see that.
Helion Neves was in tears as he climbed for the car after scoring his first ever victory. The Brazilian was in the hunt all day and took over the lead shortly after half distance when Juan Montoya retired from the lead when he had a broken inner CV shaft on his Toyota-powered machine. Once in the lead, Castro Neves was in control, fending off a couple of attacks by Mad Max Pappas in the closing stages to score his first win, and as I said, 101 for Team Penske. He spoke to the media after the race.
Actually, I have to just be careful. I know that it's a tough track and have to be very focused. But I was trying to keep my focus all the time and try to not miss any points and not miss any breaking points to crash. So I'm glad that I finished. I'm glad for Marvin Fancy. Hey, well, in the beginning I have a very good car, but unfortunately he's very selfish with that. And also, I had a very good car. I want to go for it to overtake on the track, but he was telling me, save you. And I did it.
Oh, man, I'm not a lot. I have no worries today, but I'm not very happy.
Pappas, in second place, had a fairly quiet afternoon as it was. He stayed out of trouble to score more points for the team Rahal.
The ground, you know, we had a very, very good car. The Miller guys have done a very good job. And we're very close to kick everyone else fast, you know, but that will be for the next one. So we had it for him, you know. I think we had a little problem on the front end of the car towards the last 10 laps of the race and lots of good traffic, but I'm very happy, you know. Ford here has done a very good job. Thanks, Jeff.
Sainz, Oriol Servà, scored his best result to date with a third place to fill the podium after having drove a tidy but competitive race.
And I'm very happy.
So yesterday you said I got more in the car. Obviously you did.
Yes, first session here I was third, and then we lost a little bit our way, but we came back the good way, and I'm very proud of all the team and myself.
None of the championship front runners had a day to remember. Paul Tracy was excluded after a pit incident that saw him injure one of his crew members. breaking a few toes, was the official report. Jimmy Vassar struggled to seventh place, whilst Roberto Moreno crashed out of third. Juan Montoya retired from the lead, as I said, with a dry shaft failure, whilst Gildy Ferenc, his team of Castro Neves' teammate, and Christian Fittipaldi had it coming together, and Adrian Fernandez lost time with a spin before retiring when a tear-off visor strip was stuck into his turbo wastegate, another freak accident which plagued the Bel-Air circuit right from the start. Dario Franchitti finished in fourth position despite struggling with a poor handling car for most of the race. This was caused by flapping brake dust, duct, which caused inconsistent braking as he ran in second place. He dropped down to seventh before pitting, and then after drove cautiously to the finish.
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of points by virtue of other people either breaking down in one case or throwing it away and driving into each other in other people's cases. We had a good car to start with. We weren't getting the fuel mileage in the first stint, and I was very surprised because we were leaned out a long way. But then we had a right front brake duct snap away, and I immediately came on the radio and said, something's wrong here. The car is trying to turn hard right on the straight. When I brake, it tries to turn left. It starts to understeer to the right hand, it was oversteer to the left, and the braking became inconsistent because the front brakes were overheating. So that's when Max and a whole lot of other people got past, because I thought something had broken in the back of the car, and the last thing I wanted to do was go down in the turn 7, hit the brakes, and have the thing swap ends. So I felt out for a couple of laps, but unfortunately some guys got past. But you know, we ended up with four. We need to work on the car, work on the fuel mileage, and hopefully we'll come back stronger for them.
And this weekend, the teams head over to Portland. As we look at the qualifying for Portland, Helio Castroneves has carried on from where he left off to take the pole for round 8 of the FedEx Champ Car Series. The Portland track, a very interesting one on a airfield, making it one of the unique circuits in the championship. And fresh from his victory in Detroit last weekend, he was ever so delighted when he spoke to the media.
Wow, what a great day. Team and Andy, we both worked very together. Even the Honda guys, we really try and put up the setup right away and on the right moment. Unfortunately, the track changed so much that you never know what to expect. And this has happened yesterday. So today, we knew what to do. And not only us, but Marlboro Team fans, we did a 1-2, and this is just great.
You talked last week about your dreams coming true. What are your dreams now? What do you do after winning a race?
Go for the second one, and of course, after that, you have to keep working hard as we're doing. We're working really strong to keep growing, to keep continuing the success. And then one of my dreams is be the champion, be the number one, and who knows, that guy going to make happen.
A big smile. Today, Helio Castroneves is number one.
It was Castroneves' Penske teammate, Gildy Ferenc, who lines up in second on fourth.
Nah, I mean, it's okay. We had quite a good qualifying session, you know. It's so close. It's whoever can squeeze a little bit more out of it. So, I mean, it's great for the team. I mean, obviously, being in the front row, it's just fantastic. I think we have a good car for tomorrow, and we've got to see what happens. I would tend to believe that it's more because of, every time I came here, I had some great cars to drive, and this year, with the team Penske, is no exception. The car is really handling well. It makes the driver's job that much easier. Nah, there wasn't anything more in the tires. that was it. You did that one lap, and you get the best out of it. And the second run, they lose their edge. It would have been impossible to repeat it.
Roberto Moreno lines up in third place for Patrick Racing. He had a good run until trouble in Detroit.
Just great to be part of the Vision team. They're so experienced, and we've been working very close between the two cars, me, Adrian, and the engineers. And because we've been in different sessions, one has been helping the other one. So it's been great working in this team, and it's all paying off. Slowly we're building up. We came here, and if you saw in my first session, I was like 20th or 23rd. So we walked throughout, and we came out good, and I think we have a very good race car also for tomorrow. A little thing that we all been chasing little things, okay? And he's done a couple of things that worked in his car, so we took a chance on it, worked on my race car. I did another development myself in the car, and paid off really well, and it was good at the end of the day. In Detroit, we didn't have a very good race car in the race, and I had a bit of a problem with the back marker, who was fighting with the leaders, although he was two laps behind. To try to avoid him, I ended up hitting the wall. But this is water under the bridge. The car is good here. I'm sure we're going to have a great race car for tomorrow. The track has changed today only because you put more rubber into it. And then once this, so it became faster. Tomorrow the rubber will become like little gravels on the racetrack. So it goes from good to worse. So it will be different than today. Basically, you just anticipate those things and make sure you have a good car to adapt to a slipperier situation.
Yeah, now moving to the other side of the Atlantic, over to Germany. And last weekend, we talked about qualifying for the latest round of the new DTM, the German Touring Car Championship, which was at Oschersleben on Sunday. As it was Manuel Reuter driving an Opel Vectra, who took a double victory. He dominated the first race of the day and then repeated that race in the second race when he cruised home ahead of his teammate Joe Winkelhock by over 7 seconds. German Marcel Fassler finished third after a strong drive through the field from ninth on the grid, helped in part by a series of accidents and incidents. The Mercedes driver ran seventh at the end of the opening lap before moving past Pedro Lamy at the third corner on the fourth lap. So very interesting to see that the thing's going quite well for the new German Touring Car Championship. One area where they haven't had much luck there is with Audi. The App team says that they're going to have to get their act together fairly quickly to become a fairly strong force in that series, because currently at this point in time they've had a lot of their normal drivers, such as Laurent Ayala and Christian Apps, away racing at Le Mans, and their replacements, James Thompson and Roland Ash, had spent most of their time getting grips with the circuit and the car. So as it is, it'll be a case of probably trying to catch up for the rest of the season, no doubt, getting themselves up to a stage where they're competitive. But already it looks like there are other manufacturers, including BMW, interested in joining that championship. During the week as well, we've had a three-day test at Magny-Cours in the lead-up to the French Grand Prix. As always, the Formula 1 teams get a chance to practice in a number of the circuits around on the scenes. And it was Mika Häkkinen who was the top of the timesheets on the last day of testing at Magny-Cours, and he came in ahead of Rubens Barrichello. Olivier Panis was testing for McLaren, Michael Schumacher and Ferrari. Frentzen is running the Jordan there, and actually there's talk that the Jordan they were running could have the same C-spec engine block as the Works Honda VAR team, so that could prove interesting to see where the results come from there.
Alright, interesting to go from one FIA event, which is of course the Formula 1, to, well, an event that's been around for a long, long time, but now upgraded to World Cup status, and Mike Porter joins us on the line because the Australian Safari is that event.
Yes, hello.
Yes, Mike, and great news for the Australian Safari to be upgraded to a World Cup status and on the World Cup calendar, which sees it running alongside of the Rally of Egypt, the Desert Challenge in the United Arab Emirates, also the events, the monster event in Tunisia, and also the race, the Master Rally through France and Turkey.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, it's fantastic news because obviously the fact that we must clarify this and say that this is only for motorcycles only. It's part of the FIM World Cup. The Australian Safari is also for four-wheel drive vehicles, of course. But next year, the motorcycle component of the event will have FIM World Cup status, and that will guarantee the participation of all the leading works teams and all the overseas riders who dominate all the major events around the world, including the Paris-Dakar. So we're going to see KTM, Yamaha, Honda, Husqvarna and possibly BMW in Australia with all their best riders.
It is an event which is certainly different to any of the other rallies that are in Australia, and it has given opportunities for this event to be seen on the international stage.
Well, it is. I mean, it's 5,000. This year's event, from August 20th to 27th, for example, sanctioned by the FIM and the FIA, it's 5,000 kilometres Alice Springs to Darwin over 7 days, which 3,000 kilometres of that are competitive stages. The star attraction, of course, I guess this year is Kevin Schwantz. from the motorcycling point of view. Also, Stephen Greenfield, the defending champion, he's going to be back on a Honda, and Bruce Garland will be defending his title in the auto division in the Holden Jackaroo.
Now, a lot of controversy in the months leading up to this event with, I think it was one of Garland's cars that was stolen.
It was. It was actually just before he competed in the Condobolin 750 event a couple of months ago, and Bruce has two cars, and the one that he was taking to Condobolin, that was okay, but the spare one, that he parked it outside his workshop and for the day, and just down the street a little bit, and came out at the end of the day to put it back in the garage, and it was gone. But it was recovered in Bankstown, the suburb of Bankstown in Sydney, a couple of days later, and it was returned. Whoever took it gutted some of the internal componentry out of it, but around about $25,000 worth of equipment was taken. But Bruce actually has a pretty interesting itinerary coming up. He's done the Condobolin race, which he won. He did the Finke Desert race. He's also doing the Nevada 2000 in the United States, so they're his big lead-up races to this year's safari.
And cross-country rallying events are on what is a little bit of a boom right around the world. At the moment, more and more promotions going into them, and a lot more participants.
Well, yes, that's, you know, the event in Australia is organised by Octagon, who are, of course, one of the world's biggest event management specialist companies. One of their, as far as motorsport goes, one of their other championships is the World Superbike Championship. Octagon and the Flamini Group run that. So they're upgrading the promotion and everything of the event in Australia. And also the television, now that we're going to be part of the World Cup, the television will be much greater because there is a worldwide television deal in place for the whole World Cup. So Australia will be able to tap into that, and that's going to, obviously that's a lot of interest to the Northern Territory government, who are backers of the event, because that will guarantee much greater exposure to the event overseas. But I think the real interesting thing is that we shouldn't overlook is that by getting all these overseas works riders and teams out here, it gives the local competitors a chance to prove how good they are. And if we might have a, you know, a young competitor who's you know, not quite where he stands, sure where he stands internationally, he can get in against these overseas guys, and if he proves himself up to standard, well, that could lead to racing opportunities overseas. It's a bit like what we see in the World Superbike Championship at Phillip Island, where the local guys get a chance to get in against and race against all the works riders. And if you think back to 1998 at Oran Park, there's a young Australian called Michael Doohan who came out and whipped all the World Superbike Championship riders at Oran Park, and that put him into Grand Prix racing the next year. So, you know, it will provide a stepping stone for our young motorcycle competitors, and that's really, you know, a great thing about the event.
But it is also, as you said, an automotive festival right throughout the whole 5,000 kilometre distance.
Well, it is. We stop at, like this year's event, we're stopping, I think there's two or three nights we stop at Alice Springs. You know, we go out and circle and then come back, but stopping at small towns like Tennant Creek and various other points along the way, and then the final trip into Darwin. And at each of these small stops, it gives some of these outback towns a taste of international sport, which obviously they don't see in any other shape or form, perhaps apart from the International Boomerang Championships wherever they're held. I guess we've got, maybe that's a politically incorrect thing to say. But even Darwin itself, you know, they have a round of the V8s up there, but they don't have a national basketball team or a national football team or anything like that. So for the people of Darwin, this is a big event for them.
Mm. Now, with the Northern Territory underwriting it, are they also the major sponsors, or have you been able to secure a naming rights sponsor to the event?
No, that's all Octagon are working on all of those details at the moment. The Northern Territory government, you know, obviously we can't reveal the details of the business situation, but the Northern Territory government are supporting the event, and they're obviously very keen and enthused about this new World Cup status. One of the other things that should be pointed out too is that this will now be the fourth World Championship sanctioned event for motorcycling in Australia next year, because obviously we have the Grand Prix for 500s, 250s and 125s at Phillip Island. We have the World Superbike Championship at Phillip Island. And this year, for the first time, we had Motocross Grand Prix at Broadford in Victoria. So, and now we've got ourselves a World Cup international cross-country rally. So, you know, people who like international motorcycling sport in Australia, if you consider our geographical position, we're pretty well catered for.
And I think they're still working on getting around to the World Cup Speedway, which is the 500cc Speedway motorcycles, which would complete the crown, because I can't see us getting around to the World Cup Speedway ice racing.
No, probably not too many places where you could hold that, maybe Melbourne or Tasmania.
Yeah.
But I think, no, look, the Safari, it's, you know, the future's really never looked better. As I say, Octagon on board using their vast promotional capabilities, you know, an international television deal that the event can tap into, being able to use all the FIM infrastructure. You know, there's going to have to be certain things done within the event to upgrade it to reach, you know, there's certain standards that have to be reached to sort of qualify for FIM guidelines. So it's really, you know, the event will move ahead, I think, significantly in the next couple of years.
All right then, Mike, and I guess wearing another hat, another good crowd at the Lakeside round of the Super Touring Cars last weekend, which will see us, I think, television this Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's true. Eight-round championship, second year of a five-year television deal with the Seven Network. As you know, this year's Super Touring Championship is in a transitional stage. We'll be moving to a full summer series in the year 2001-2002. Because we had that championship, well, none of the guys had raced since Bathurst last year, we couldn't switch to a complete summer round or summer championship this year, because it would have meant the guys hadn't raced for 12 months. So what we've got is four rounds in winter and then four rounds in summer. Now, as far as the television goes, the first four rounds will be shown from midnight to 2 a.m, 10 days after each round. But in the summer series, a much better television deal, two-hour show for each program, but it will be shown on the Sunday after each round between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Obviously, one of the reasons why we're moving to summer is obviously to take advantage of the better climate. It's more spectator-friendly, but also with our television deal being with Channel 7, it takes us away from AFL, and also this year, which is a one-off, is the Olympic Games. So the television is good at the moment, but it's going to be a lot better in summer. Mm-hmm. We also have Cameron McConville, for those who are unaware, former Audi Super Touring driver. He's one of the commentators on the show, along with Mark Beretta, who's the co-anchor for the Sunrise Show on the Seven Network, and he's also a two-time veteran of Olympic Games commentating for them.
And I believe Melinda Price also part of that team.
Yeah, Melinda's doing some feature stories in between her GTP racing commitments and the odd VA drive, so it's good to have her on board as well. We've also got Michael Maher, who's ex-Wide World of Sport Channel 9 journalist, so it's a pretty well-credentialed television team. Anyone who saw the first show, I think you'd realise, you know, it was a very high standard of production. The next round of the championship we've got coming up in 2 weeks at Oran Park, and the future tourers will be back with us. They weren't at Lakeside, so we're expecting to have more than 20 cars on the grid. And Paul Morris, of course, will be carrying the extra 40 kilos again with his unbeaten record this year. He's going to take a lot of stopping to win this year's championship. He's got a great car and a great little team, and they do it really well.
One series of events that Australians like to watch throughout the winter, as it were, is something that Channel 7 had last year. You may or may not be able to help us out with this one, but the British Touring Car Championship, of course, that was part of the package last year with the Super Tourers.
Yeah, there will be highlights of the BTCC shown within the Australian Championship telecast. That's how that's going to work. So, but again, in the summer, I believe there could be a dedicated time slot of 30 minutes, perhaps before our championship telecast or maybe afterwards. In the summer, Seven have, you know, obviously with no AFL on, they don't do cricket. Their main summer sporting events are tennis and golf, sort of spasmodically spread over the summer. So there is certainly a lot more, you know, scope for that type of thing. But yeah, in the short term, you'll you know, anyone who follows BTCC, you'll be able to see it on our championship telecast.
All right, that's good news there. I know a lot of people enjoy watching the Bang and Crash there. And, of course, with the new rules coming into place, it is going to make for an even more competitive championship right throughout 2001.
It will indeed. And did you see the motorcycle Grand Prix last night?
In fact, I was partly watching a couple of them. I think Alex Barros finally, after about 300 starts or thereabouts, has picked up a win.
Well, he did. It was his first win since, as you may not know, I've worked with Michael Dillon for the last 13 years, and I remember being at Aston in 1992, I think it was, and Barros led by 6 seconds on the last lap and threw it into the sand pit just before the chicane, about a quarter of a mile from the finish line. And but there was some great racing last night. I think Anthony West from the Gold Coast, you know, terrific ride by him. He started 22nd on the grid and hit the lead on lap 2 and led the race till lap 11, and that was in the wet, where you know, he really shone in those conditions. And as the track dried, unfortunately, he got picked up and passed by Ukawa, Jacques and Nakano in the last couple of laps and finished 4th. But that was a real breakthrough for him, and I think we're going to see great things from him at Phillip Island, and hopefully Gary McCoy.
And one thing with McCoy, I think back down in about 15th position.
Yeah, Gary's been running the 16.5-inch tyres, which suit his style this year, and he started off really well. He won in South Africa, and he got 3rd in the second race in Malaysia, but he's struggled a little bit since then. But, you know, I think, you know, even if Gary can't perhaps win the championship, I think on any given day in the right conditions, if he's got the right bike set up and the tyres are working well and he's working well and it's a Yamaha-friendly circuit, well, I think Gary McCoy is, you know, certainly a chance to win races, and I think Anthony West will be shortly as well.
Mm.
And if you look at what, you know, Troy Corser and Troy Bayliss are doing in the World Superbike Championship, I mean, 1-2 in both races at Misano a week ago, and they're starting 1st and 2nd on the grid tonight. You know, as far as motorcycle racing goes, Australia's looking pretty dominant at the moment. I think, okay, Michael Dillon's retired, but the actual spread of talent across all the various categories is really strong. And that's not even including people like Jason Crump, you know, who you don't hear so much about, but is doing really well in Speedway and the Grand Prix over in Europe.
Yeah, that's right. He is a fantastic driver and a fantastic person on top of that. And with the Assen race, it's just amazing. It's, the Holland race is always on a Saturday.
It is. It's always been like that. And that's why they get such a big crowd, because what that enables people to do is there are literally, I've been to Assen 4 or 5 times. Assen is a small town out in the countryside, and people ride up on their big touring bikes from Spain, from France, from Belgium, from all over Europe, and they can ride up there on Friday, watch the race on Saturday, and they've got all Sunday to ride home again. And they camp out on Saturday night, and it's I've been to, you know, many different circuits around Europe, but it's definitely my favourite. The weather is probably pretty much like Melbourne. It can be, you know, I've seen it when it's the 125 race can be held in pouring rain, and an hour later the 250s can be held on a dry track, and then it can be raining again for the 500s. It's but one thing about Assen is that the corners are all cambered, and it's sort of like a crown in the middle of the road, so even when it rains the water does wash off a lot quicker than at some other circuits.
Yeah, it is an amazing circuit, because I know right before the 125 event it was teeming down, and it managed to be a dry event for the 500s.
Well, the 500 race was stopped and restarted, of course, but it's a bit unfortunate for Anthony West. I think if it kept raining for another 10 minutes, he probably would have won the race.
Yeah, pretty interesting championship that we're going through in all the divisions of the World Formula, the FIM Motorcycle Championships right now.
Well, it is. I mean, the 125s, I think, you know, if you look at the 125s, you've got Yuichi Yui on the Derby, you know, the Spanish manufacturer. I mean, he got up and won again last night. He's,
first win in 25 years, I think, for the Derby.
That's
at Assen.
And the other thing about the Derby this year is it's either first or second, or it's nowhere, because there's been 8 rounds and Yui's had 3 wins in a second and 4 DNFs. So certainly when the thing finishes, it finishes strongly. I guess Roberto Locatelli's going to be probably the favourite for that championship at this stage. But the 250s is looking really close. You've got Hiro Kato, the former Japanese champion, riding the Gresini Honda. He's had a fabulous debut season. Every track he's been to in Europe has been new to him, and he's really thrown down. He's led the Honda Challenge, if you like, against Olivier Jacques and Shinya Nakano, who are, you know, veterans in Europe. Or Nakano, it's only his second year, but you know, those three riders have been strong all year, as has Toru Ukawa, and I think Anthony West is closing on them all the time. And it's big credit for Anthony to be in front of guys like Ralph Orman and Marco Melandri and Franco Battaini, who are, again, probably more experienced. You know, he's having a terrific season. And with the 500s, well, you know, Roberts is only sort of 15 points or something in front of Checker, and then you've got guys like Abe. He's still a factor, and he can, with Abe, you just never know what he's going to do, but he might just win the next couple of races.
Roberts having an injury there at Aston and not able to run, or did he fall in practice?
Kenny Roberts?
Yeah.
No, he crashed on the first lap.
Oh, okay, because I didn't see the start.
Yeah, he was high-sided. Loris Caprossi broke a couple of bones in his wrist or his fingers or hand, crashed in the warm-up, but still rode in the race and came third, which is a fabulous result. I think if, you know, the Repsol Honda team, which has won the last six World Championships, they've struggled this year, but certainly Cito Ponza's team has been very strong all year, as has, you know, Valentino Rossi. He's had an excellent first season as well, but if you look at the last two or three races, you've seen Barros on pole position and running strongly. Caprossi won at Mugello. He was again got pole at Aston and ran strongly there. So there's a good mix of bikes. You know, the competition between the manufacturers seems to be a bit closer this year. It's not just Honda winning everything.
Mm. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you tonight on Inside Motorsport. We look forward to catching up with you right throughout the rest of the season, with, of course, the Safari coming up in August. It's going to be a huge event, and all the motorcycle fans just got another reason to start touring once again.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for your time, and here's hoping Troy Corser and Troy Bayliss can do the business tonight in the World Superbikes.
And of course, that race, well, not all that far away from getting underway, race one, probably about an hour.
I'm not sure which television network you're affiliated with, but if you tune into Fox Sports at 8 o'clock, I think you'll catch the start of the first race. And also, we shouldn't forget the Super Sports, because we've got Carl Muggeridge and Andrew Pitt both doing great things there as well. I mean, Carl Muggeridge on the 10-car-day Honda, he's made the guys in the Castrol Honda Works team look very ordinary this year. He's been on pole position in a couple of races, and I think he's running fourth or fifth in the championship. He's just another guy that we've got over there who's doing really well.
All right, then. It's as you said, Fox Sports, and, of course, Channel 10 will carry it on, I think, Monday night?
No, I think it's tonight.
Oh, okay, it's a late telecast then.
For those of you who haven't got pay television, I think it's on around midnight tonight. Not so, they only show the superbikes and not the super sports. So all the Carl Muggeridge and Andrew Pitt fans had better get themselves to somewhere who's got Fox Sports, and they'll be able to see those blokes. But certainly, and another guy racing, having a bit of a renaissance, is Peter Goddard, who's been plucked out of the British Championship to replace Gregorio Lavilla on the Works Kawasaki, and Peter got eighth in both races at Misano last week, and he's qualified in the top 10 ahead of his teammate Yanagawa, so that's a good effort by him.
Yeah, it is indeed. And well, we might be short a few riders in the 500s, but we've really been dominating the superbikes in just sheer weight of numbers.
Yeah, I think, as I said before, I think the actual spread of talent at the moment, I mean, if you go back to the early 90s, there was, you know, Gardner, Doohan, McGee, Beattie, you know, and Goddard at the top level, all in 500s. But, you know, perhaps we weren't so strong in any of the other classes. But if you look now, we don't have anyone dominating the 500s, although we still had Gary McCoy, who's won a 500 GP, which is a fabulous effort in itself. But certainly there's a big spread of riders. If, as I say, people like Jason Crump, World Supersport, World Superbike, British Superbike Championship, and then we haven't even mentioned fellas like Matthew Millan, you know, in the AMA Superbike Championship in the United States. So he's just another guy that's, you know, a lot of people feel Maladen should probably be on a 500, and you know, his opportunity may yet come. You just don't know what Suzuki you've got planned for him.
All right then, Mike, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we look forward to speaking with you right throughout the upcoming months.
No worries, thanks very much.
Thanks very much to Mike Porter there joining us, and of course, great news for the motorcycle fans out there with the Australian Safari being upgraded to World Cup status. Just a few we might just run through quickly. It is, well, an amazing thing that Rusty Wallace has been able to take so much heart out of this season. He's now the king of the pole positions with six, with him being once again on top at the Sears Point Road Course. Rusty Wallace took the Bud pole in his fourth in the last six races for the Save Mart Craigan 350 at Sears Point Road Course. And of course, the Missouri native posted a time of 1 minute 10.652 seconds around the 1.949 mile track to set for the event set in the Sonoma winemaking region, and it has shattered Jeff Gordon's track record. Although Wallace's Penske Southern Ford Taurus has been the car to beat in qualifying this season, he has only won once, and many are tipping Jeff Gordon to kickstart his lackluster season with a win this weekend. Gordon's Hendrick Motorsport Chevrolet Monte Carlo has won only once this season as well. In fact, only Earnhardt Jr. and Tony Stewart have been two-time winners in a very tight NASCAR championship season. The biggest surprise of qualifying was Kyle Petty. His Hot Wheels Pontiac headed the pole up until Wallace's run, qualifying 39th out of the 46 cars at Sears Point, snatching the place. Joe Gibbs' teammates Bobby Labonte and Tony Stewart were lining up third and fourth with their Pontiacs, whilst acknowledgement to Sterling Martin, a road course veteran, is in a shock sixth position. The Winston Cup's only visit to two road courses during a mammoth slog around the USA, and whilst many oval experts are now begrudgingly putting extra effort into turning right, Gordon, Wallace, Mark Martin, Ricky Rudd and Dale Earnhardt are the only true road course experts from the old school. With an influx of seasoned road racers enjoying, Winston Cup success, and expected Stewart, Scott Pruitt, Robbie Gordon are all expected to feature as well. But it is Wallace on the pole, Kyle Petty beside him, and it's great to see Kyle Petty coming back so strongly there. We also have Labonte, Stewart, Gordon, Marlin, Martin, Elliott, Pruitt and Rudd making up the top 10. And of course, over at Watkins Glen in New York, the Busch Grand National will be running.
Yep, and in World Rally Championship news, there's the story this week that the Monte Carlo Rally is to stay in the World Rally Championship after the organisers promised a major haul of the classic event, which will have a package of changes, including a much tighter itinerary, a reduction in the number of cars starting the event to just 40, and also improved crowd control plans. As well, the World Rally Championship will have a six-round pocket rocket championship introduced for rallying Super 1600 category. They were given a six-round series by the World FIA World Council last week, which will see the championship staying in February 2001 if they have a minimum of 10 drivers registered to enter. If they do, they'll have rounds in the Rally Catalunya, the Acropolis Rally, the Nesty Rally in Finland, Rally San Remo, the V Rally Tour de Course, and the Network Q Rally of Great Britain. And Mitsubishi are also still looking for the reasons for the hub shaft failures that ended their host victory on the Acropolis Rally. The shafts, which were produced in Japan, not Rally's Rallyouts Rugby England HQ, and the whole batch have now been removed from circulation. So I'd say that'll be a bit of soul-searching to see what went wrong with those particular components.
We might quickly, just as we're wrapping up here on Inside Motorsport, we might quickly go to our very good friends at the BBC for their wrap-up of motor racing, well, from last weekend.
Thanks to Montreal, where Ferrari secured a 1-2 finish at the Canadian Formula One Grand Prix. Michael Schumacher consolidated his position at the top of the World Drivers' Championship with victory. His teammate, Rubens Barrichello, came second. Benetton's Giancarlo Fisichella finished third. But it was a bad day for McLaren, as Jonathan Ledyard reports.
Yet again, David Coulthard will be glad to see the back of Montreal. His best-laid plans to home in on Michael Schumacher's championship lead fell apart because of a time penalty which dropped him from a hard-charging second to a boxed-in tenth. Schumacher's fifth win this season, his first from pole, backed up by his teammate Rubens Barrichello, rubbed in the frustration even more. It also took him 22 points clear of Coulthard. McLaren's only crumb of comfort in their 500th race was Mika Hakkinen's fourth place. Jenson Button laboured in 11th with an out-of-sorts Williams, but Jaguar endured yet more pain. Irvine finished last, Herbert dropped out first.
Well, despite his win, Schumacher says there's still a long way to go in the Drivers' Championship.
I have been through almost 10 years in Formula 1. I have made many experiences in this business, so I want to wait until it's final. Anyway, I want to say congratulations to all the team, because they've done a perfect job all weekend, and as well to my teammate, because he protected me at the end as I was going very slow just to play safe, and he's a good man. So one moment or one day I will pay back for that, and thanks for that.
Elsewhere in motorsport, the German Audi team swept the board at Le Mans 24-hour race in France. They occupy the first three positions. That's only the fourth time that's ever happened in the race. Italy's Emanuele Pirot was first. Second was Alain McNish of Britain. Germany's Christian Abt was third. Simon Hill reports.
Well, as the dust settles on an unbearably hot 68th Le Mans 24-hour race, some thought must surely be given to making this event more competitive next year. That's not to take anything away from the Audis, whose 1-2-3 finish proved they were the class act. But the fact that the fourth place car couldn't get closer than 24 laps shows just what a one-sided contest this was. Panos and Cadillac briefly threatened, and they'll be back next year older and wiser, but it really needs the big names like Porsche and Jaguar back on the grid to set the pulses and the cars racing. Maybe they'll be tempted back after watching this race, but it may be, by contrast, proved to be the swan song for the legendary Mario Andretti. At 60, his dream of completing the legendary treble of Formula One World Championship, Indy 500 and Le Mans seems to be disappearing over the horizon. A bit like the Audis, really.
Yes, and Stephen Hill with that report. Thanks very much to the BBC. We might quickly move on now to a couple of stories. We'll hang off going to England just yet, because there has been quite a number of stories coming out lately about the GMC 400. We haven't touched on them too much, but contrary to popular, or rather a misconceived belief, that motorsport doesn't have a strong following in the ACT, the sport support is alive and well, but it seems to be a guarded secret. I thank Michael Atwell for that introduction, because with the FIA Rally of Canberra and the GMC V8 Supercar event, they have been extremely strong. I will let you continue on with another whinging whiner about motorsport.
Yes, one of the things we've had as well as a release regarding the GMC 400 from one of the bodies that was opposed to the event, and they say that the number of people that was announced by the organisers of 109,000 people was incorrect, and that there's actually less than 60,000 people. So it all goes about how you keep track of what is a visit to the track. Now, obviously, if you have 50,000 people visit to the same place in 3 days, you know, some people would say, well, that's only 50,000 people through the gate. Other people say it's 150,000 people through the gate. And so what it's coming down to is an argument of semantics about how many people came through. This particular group is saying that basically there was less than 50,000 people came through. Well, I think the main thing is, if 50,000 people want to turn up 3 days in a row to see an event, good luck to them. And there's still 50,000 people paying to get through the gate, and that's the bottom line of it. In interesting news following on from the news about Le Mans is the talk that next year the all-conquering GTS Works Chrysler Viper team could be set to pull out of Le Mans and the American Le Mans series next year in order to concentrate on the development of a new version of the GTSR for 2002. The Vipers have been the cars to be in the GTS class and also notched up an overall victory at the Daytona 24 Hours, and therefore their pullout would be a major impact upon the championships and Le Mans. But as it is, since they're trying to organise this new edition, new version of the Viper, obviously they don't want to have their embarrassing moments on the track. They'd rather do it privately testing, which would actually leave it then open for the Corvette C5Rs. Those cars finished second and third in their class at Le Mans behind the Orica Vipers, and they're tipped to increase their effort for the American Le Mans series. And for anybody who is thinking about going over to Adelaide for the race of 1,000 years, we have two words which will help encourage you to attend, and they are Hawaiian Tropic.
Yes, exactly. And I will certainly put my recommendation in for that, because I'd seen the French version, I've seen an American version, and an Australian version couldn't go any worse at all. Look, the BMP has completed its takeover of Toka. An announcement on new rules is expected in the next week, and the management of the British Touring Car Championship is at least completely in the hands of the British Motorsport Promoters Group, a conglomeration of British circuit owners. The BMP sealed the deal over the winter to take the promotion of the BTCC from 2002, and in April reached agreement in principle to take over Toka, the firm which has run the series since 1992. Earlier this week, the deal that was at last concluded as the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. The future of the series hung in the balance for almost a year as details were finalised. Now, with complete control, the BMP can go ahead at full speed. Much speculation has surrounded the future of the British Touring Car Championship as the British Motorsport Promoters received bids from various bodies as to the format of the rules of the series would run. Competitors have been between two superstar formulas from the brand's hatch owner Octagon and the rival Super Touring Car budget bid. The BMP is expected to announce on Tuesday the new rules that the British Touring Car Championship will run in 2001. Sources suggest that they are likely to be in the form of a low-cost Super Touring formula, similar to the current Class B Super Production category, but modified to allow more powerful engines and more robust suspensions to look a little bit more dynamic. Rumours are rife in Toka's paddock that the new manufacturers are already interested in returning to the new look British Touring Car Championship, including Rover, Alfa Romeo and Volkswagen. So big moves are put there, and that's all important as it flows on into Australia.
Well, it's interesting as well, because the fact is that with this new look British Touring Car Championship they're talking about, which is sort of like a super production formula, it means people like Alfa Romeo, who are currently running in Super Production and Super Touring, they can actually move some of the componentry and development work they've done on their Super Touring car, put it into their Super Production car, and come up with a new category car. Volkswagen have been looking at it for a long time. They've actually got Super Production cars running, and they've got all the experience and background from the Audi component of that company group. And Rover, again, they're probably going to need something to save them, because currently in England they're about to go down the drain.
BMW, isn't it?
And BMW's going to save them, so that could be interesting to see what happens there. So it is looking very good for the future, and it's interesting too, the number of drivers who have said that they reckon this, what they call back to the future, because in a lot of ways it's like the British Touring Car Championship of 92-93, is exactly the way to go, and they'd be more than interested in getting involved, including people like Will Hoyer and Tim Harvinson, all saying, look, the opportunity arose, they would drive in that new category. And of course you've got manufacturers like Peugeot already saying that if that's the way they go, they will be back stronger than ever and with a new model car. So things are looking good for the British Touring Car Championship, and that of course will no doubt flow across to the Australian Championship as well.
Now, we had been hoping to get a hold of Karen Shearer from Croft, as we normally do have a preview of the British Touring Car Championship, but unfortunately we haven't been able to connect up with her at the moment. But Richard Rydell takes the pole for rounds 13 and 14, and it is an all front forward front row at Croft, and I just think I've now worked out why that we haven't been able to link up with her. But you put that number in, 66?
Yep.
All right.
That's an 80, sir. Oh, what a update. He's saying, is it hard to drive the weather here? Oh, I know.
I thought you were going to go with the actual qualifying for Croft.
I was, but then the thing said new weather. I was saying, what's going on here? Okay, for Croft, it's an all forward front row as Ricardo Rydell's taken pole for rounds 13 and 14. Actually, interesting, Croft is the last round they have in the normal format, because the next round, which is at Snetterton on the 8th of July, which is a Saturday, is a nighttime race meeting, which is where they actually put everything, the qualifying and the races, all into one day's racing, with the final race, the feature race, being under lights at percent of them. But anyhow, Ford is continuing to dominate at the top of the British Touring Car Championship after Ricard Rydell grabbed pole for today, as it is now, British Touring Car Championship feature race at Croft, with a lap almost half a second faster than anyone else could manage. The Mondeos have been the car to beat thus far this season, and with Rydell and teammate Anthony Reid in the top two positions, the pair continue to prove the pro drive compared to Ford's were the class of the field. It was a good lap, commented the Swede. I had a good balance on the car, and that's hard to find here at Croft with its mix of fast and slow corners. Of course, I've got no extra ballast, which helps, but I'd rather have the 40 kilos in the win and second place I should have got at Silverstone. Anthony Reid was pleased to have set second fastest time despite carrying 30 kilograms of ballast, though he reckoned he could have been close to his teammate had he found a clear lap late in the session. Tom Christensen had better luck and was more successful in avoiding traffic fresh from his Le Mans trial. The Dane was third quickest behind and praised the West Surrey racing team for effective use of the limited availability of new tyres. Late in the session, the West Surrey squad gave him new front tyres and swapped the rear tyres side to side. It worked really well, said Christensen. Jason Plato had posted fastest time for qualifying during Friday's test session, but was unable to carry his speed through to qualifying due to mechanical problems. Effectively, the ECU shut down his car, and that was all she wrote. While his teammates in the 888 racing team, Ivan Muller, and Vince Rademacher were unable to fire up the Vectras after stopping for the compulsory weight and ride height checks, so they start from the back of the grid. So they've got some real problems there. But as it is, the feature race qualifying, Ricard Rydell on pole from Reid in the Ford Mondeo with Christensen on record, and Matt Neal, fourth fastest on the grid in his Nissan Primera ahead of Gabriele Tarquini, fifth in his Honda Accord. And Menu and the other of the Ford Mondeos, Plato and the Vectra Morrison and the Peugeot 3.6, actually got some of the production cars ahead of the Super Tourers. In the second, the sprint race, Rydell ahead of Reid, Menu, Christensen, Plato, Neal starting from 6th, Tarquini, Morrison, Collard and Kay, Thompson, Muller and Lemmer further down the field.
All right then. Well, it has been an action-packed show. We have hoped you've enjoyed Inside Motorsport for this week, and we look forward to catching up with you next week, where we'll have all the news from the Queensland Raceway, which will be interesting to see how that all progresses in the V8 Supercar. And of course, we will have hopefully some more news on Mark Webber's test for the Arrows.
That's right, because Mark will be testing the Arrows Supertech HB1 Silverstone on the 6th of July, and hopefully by then we'll have a bit more news about what's going on. The testing has been set in to his schedule, which is extremely busy. They're driving both the Eurobet Arrows 4-3000 team and also doing the Arrows 2-seater experience rides. Now that's a thing we'd have to ask Mark about bringing back down next time he comes home. We'd gladly put our hands up for a ride in that one.
All right then, well thanks for being part of Inside Motorsport. SO and AFL, with Carlton having a great win, I am over the moon, 11 in a row for the boys in blue, and we hope you can join us next time round on Inside Motorsport AFL after the break.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
There are still car park spaces inside the Canberra Racecourse available for purchase. For just $165 including GST, you will receive parking inside the racecourse grounds during the 2000-2001 season at the ACT Racing Club. Call the ACT Racing Club on 64133888 for details. Sponsors of Triple S.
If you have a four-wheel drive and need your engine reconditioned, your suspension or driveline repaired, or are looking for reconditioned gearboxes and discs, Waterloo can look after you. Waterloo specialises in wrecking four-wheel drives and light commercial vehicles, has a full mechanical workshop and holds the largest range of four-wheel drive parts in the Canberra region. As a special offer, Waterloo is now offering a 10% discount to all Triple S listeners who mention this ad. Waterloo, easy to find in the old Coca-Cola factory, Gas Road, Gwendin, sponsors of Triple S.
There are lots of adults who can't read and write as well as they'd like to, but it's never too late to learn, and it's easier than you'd think. Phone 1300 655 06 for help with reading and writing. 1300 655 06, the Reading Writing Hotline. Phone them if you know somebody who'd like to improve their reading and writing.